Debbie Boone, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us on WBFO. First question, have you ever been to Buffalo in December?
You know, I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure about being in Buffalo in December, but I was just doing another interview, and I remembered that I had been there hosting a telethon with, I'm terrible with names, but he's the guy that's Bowser and Shauna, and we co-hosted together a telethon in Buffalo. And it was right when some massive, it was like, I think, let me think about this now. It would be 2001, I believe, or when they were touting some horrible storm that was coming. And I was supposed to take my daughter on college tours right after the telethon and meet her in New York. And it was just insane weather.
You did not get stuck in Buffalo. You managed to make it out, right?
I managed to make it to New York. And yeah, we were able to see the colleges that we wanted to see. And I have to say, Princeton in the snow was pretty gorgeous.
Was that the college she eventually went to?
It was, yeah.
I presume she graduated and you have a Princeton College graduate in your family now.
I do, and I didn't even go to college, so I cannot take one bit of credit for that.
You come from a family with a great musical heritage. Your dad is Pat Boone. Your mom's dad is country legend Red Foley. Rosemary Clooney was your mother-in-law. So who were your musical influences when you were growing up?
Well, obviously my father's music had, you know, its fair share of influence on me, and I always appreciated my dad's talent. But we had very eclectic musical taste around the house, and I think I even more so by comparison to my friends, certainly. I listened to a lot of interesting music. I remember becoming at a very young age smitten by Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald, you know. But at the same time, I liked, you know, a lot of music that all my peers were listening to as well. You know, I became a huge Streisand fan in my teens. I just appreciated the clarity and the range and the emotion with which she sang, and I think that had a huge influence. Karen Carpenter had a very big influence on me because we had similar ranges, and I loved the warmth. So, you know, as I began singing on my own, I kind of combined all the things that I loved in the people that I was listening to, and then eventually when I became part of Rosemary Clooney's family, that was an influence, you know, of major proportions for me.
No question about it. Those are some great singers and great stylists. You have a history of performing on stage. You've been in concert. You've done plays. You've also done television and, of course, been in the recording studio. So my question is, which do you prefer? Do you have a favorite?
Wow, it's an interesting question, and I don't know that anybody... I've had people ask me whether I preferred, you know, my own personal appearances or theater. But to include the third, which, you know, is also a big part of my career, being in the recording studio, and I can honestly tell you that I can't pick and choose. One of the things I'm so grateful for is that I get to do all of those things, because they have their own, you know, particular characteristics that I love. Personal appearances, you know, you have complete control of presenting yourself however you would like to. You know, you choose your songs and you choose what you're going to say. But you also, you know, fall on your own sword if it goes badly. You know, you only have yourself to blame. And people, if they don't like it, they don't like you. What I loved in musical theater was the camaraderie and the fun of working with a company. It was never the same each night because there are too many variables. So every show was different. The audience might not know the differences, but you would know the differences of how it plays out differently every night. And I loved the downtime on doing theater, too, of playing with the cast, you know, in a different town on tour or whatever. So telling a story every night with a bunch of friends is just, I think, the most fun I've ever had. And then in the recording studio, there's just something about it that I love so much, just being in a little booth and shutting your eyes and just getting into the meat of the song with no distraction and the ability to redo it and then choose, you know, what you, is your favorite take on a, you know, piece of music.
Right.
So I love all three, and I would be sad if I never got to do any one of them again.
You're coming to Buffalo to perform with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra in a holiday concert series. As a performer, as a singer, how do you prepare? How do you rehearse to perform with an orchestra, particularly a Philharmonic Orchestra?
Well, the beauty of good sound systems is that my part of it isn't all that different, except the joy in my heart when I hear the symphony. lucky for me, you know, the amplification of a microphone, it's the sound man's job to, you know, balance the mix so that I can be heard at a good balance, you know, with the gorgeous symphony. It feeds my soul, though, to sing with a symphony, and I don't get to do it as often as I would like to, so I look forward to every symphony date on my calendar. I'm doing a lot of the same songs that I will be doing here in Branson, but I have, you know, five musicians instead of a symphony orchestra, and so it'll be a whole different different ball game, but not a completely different preparation for me.
Can you give us a preview of what you'll be singing? Can you tell us what's on the program for that night? I don't expect you to sing it. I was just wondering if you can give us an idea of some of the songs that you will be performing with the Philharmonic.
Well, let me see. I'm going to look up right now in front of me the proposed rundown and see if I can give you some highlights. One thing that I think is interesting for you to know is that a lot of the arrangements were arrangements that were written for my mother-in-law, Rosemary. She gave me all of her musical arrangements.
Rosemary Clooney was a robust singer. She had a delightful voice. I never saw her perform live, but hearing her on record, she had this presence about her, what we might call a joie de vivre.
Yeah, well, I think you put it very well that you hear this sort of joie de vivre in her voice. And that was the thing I loved the most about Rosemary's singing, is that her personality and her life experience came out through her singing. And I think it's why people just felt like they knew her, whether they did or they didn't. They connected on that human level because, you know, so much of music today is, you know, sampled stuff and, you know, technical, playing around with the vocal tones. And, you know, this was just the real deal. And, you know, I think there's nothing better than the real deal. And she was it.
We talk about Rosemary Clooney and her voice and presence. How about you and your voice? How has it changed over the years? And do you like where it is right now?
I know my speaking voice has deepened. When I hear old interviews of, you know, from my 20s, I sound like Minnie Mouse to myself. I think there's a richer quality in both my speaking and my singing voice that I am very much enjoying. And I think, you know, part of that is just age, natural, you know, effects on the vocal cords. And part of it, I think, is a depth of having lived more life. And it's now, you know, a part of me and comes out in what I do. I would love it if I had a range like Barbara Streisand, but I never did. And neither did Rosemary. Rosemary didn't have, you know, one of those Cleo Lane or, you know, I don't know who else I can choose from right now, but, you know, Streisand is known for those big money notes, and those weren't ever, you know, at Rosemary's command, and they haven't been at mine. But the thing I learned from listening to and watching Rosemary is that it wasn't about the notes. It was about what was going on inside of her when she sang.
The great singers seem to have the ability to convey that emotion, to reach that person sitting in the seat in the concert hall, or reach the person on the speaker end of the radio.
Yeah. Rosemary used to, in lieu of Christmas cards, she would send her entire Christmas list, a cassette, so that's taking you back.
Wow.
She would choose a Christmas song each year and go into the studio, and during the instrumental break, she would do personal greetings to everyone on her Christmas list.
Wow, that is really amazing. Do you have a few of those cassettes, one of them at least?
I do. I think we have several at home, and my husband would know where they are. And I am ashamed to say that neither one of us have the skill of great organization, and probably over the years we don't have them all, but I'm sure we have several of them. And people look forward to that each year, as you can imagine. But I just remember one year opening the cassette and hearing her sing the first phrase of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and it felt like I had just taken a big slug of brandy, or, you know, it just, like, this warmth inside me, you know, just kind of infused my entire being. And that's what she could do with a few notes. There was love in her voice, and you felt it.
You know, that is a great alliteration, to be flooded by a sense of warmth upon hearing a singer's voice. I've read that Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett have that ability to make people feel emotionally attached, warm, fuzzy, sometimes depressed, whatever. You know, they get the soul of the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I can't speak for Frank or Tony, but one of the things that always astounded me about Rosemary, and I think it's become sort of not only a musical lesson or professional lesson, but a life lesson, is I don't think Rosemary went out on the stage thinking, how can I impress people? You know, I don't think that was it. And I think many singers, many entertainers go out there and the idea is they want people to say, oh my gosh, isn't she or isn't he fabulous? You know, oh, did you hear the way he sang that song or whatever? That Rosemary wasn't one to like, oh, I hope they like me, you know. She just went out and she gave them something. And it was, you know, up to them whether they loved it or they didn't love it. She knew what she had to offer, and she went out and she gave them something. And I think that's what made it so delightful, is that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of entertainers are very self-obsessed, you know.
It'd be pretty hard to do an interview with Debbie Boone without asking a question about You Light Up My Life.
And your question?
That song conveyed an intense amount of emotion.
Well, you know, when I recorded You Light Up My Life, I had been dating my husband for, you know, a few years, so I had exposure to Rosemary, but nothing like what I ended up, you know, being so privileged to have after marrying him and then traveling around with her and doing primarily Christmas concerts with her. I went on the road with her for about 8 years doing her Christmas concert tours with her. And I often say it was like a master class. It really was for me to work with her. But yet you're right that I had a very strong point of view when I sang that song. And I was singing it from a very real place, you know, and it wasn't about let's make a hit record. That was the furthest thing from my mind. It might have been in the writer and producer's minds, but I was just happy to get to go into the recording studio and sing this song that meant something to me. And I'm still kind of in shock as to what happened with that.
I think I know the answer to this question, but did you get it on the first take?
No. The producer and writer, Joe Brooks, who is no longer with us, was a very demanding and very, you know, kind of rough taskmaster in the studio. And it was very upsetting to me because I had very little experience. My only experience up till then in the studio was singing with my sisters, and we'd done a lot of recording. But I was always, you know, the lead singer of the four of us, and I always felt very confident, and you know, people would single me out and, you know, just say, oh, you sound great and whatever. And I got there and it was almost as if I could do nothing right, you know.
Right.
So it was a little challenging.
Were those the days of multi-tracking in the studio where you could punch in, as they say in the business, you could punch in and edit?
Yes.
And multi-track and record over and over and over again?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, all these years after the fact, I didn't know then, even, because I wasn't there for the mix, you know, how many takes they saved and, you know, how many they pulled from and that kind of thing. But I know that he had me do it over and over and over again in the studio. And I think his main objective was to get me, and I don't know if you know this story, to sound exactly like the girl that sang it for the movie soundtrack, which was not me.
So there are actually two versions of that song.
Yeah, I had the single release, and she recorded for the actress the song for the movie soundtrack. And she had been a girlfriend of his, and they had a nasty breakup, and he didn't want her voice on the single release. So it was this spiteful, dramatic scene going on, you know.
You were caught in the middle of this,
yeah.
This crossfire, huh?
Yeah, and I knew nothing about it till well after the fact. I had just gotten the phone call that I was going to go to New York and record this song, and then I just had to deal with the fact that I was being made to sing it a specific way with every inflection and intonation similar to the one, and you can hardly tell the difference. You'd have to have a very discerning ear, I think.
How many takes?
I really don't know, but it was enough that I wanted to cry. I just thought, he hates me, and, you know, I'm not sure I can give him what he wants. And I had to, on breaks, go in the bathroom and pull myself together.
Well, I guess you showed him, because the song went to number one in 1977 and stayed at number one for 10 weeks.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was shocked, you know, at certain acceptance speeches that he made. He didn't seem terribly grateful. It was sort of like, I told you so kind of speeches. And I kept thinking, I'm going to wake up from this dream, and this isn't really happening to me.
And you must have been doing something right, because a few years later, you transitioned to country, and again, you had a number one song.
Well, you know what? I've begun over the years to trust that You Light Up My Life was not just a fluke and a strange, you know, converging of who knows what elements. And I learned over the years to trust that I had a gift of my own. And I'm very glad that I got to do those country recordings. And I plan to do more, because I've very recently in my life, like say in the last 5 years, fallen in love with Red Foley material. I didn't appreciate it as much when I was younger as I do now. And it's definitely something that I am dreaming of doing, more than dreaming. I really plan to do some sort of tribute to my grandfather and record some of his fabulous music. I do a couple of pieces of his music in my show that won't be appropriate to the Buffalo show, but the show that I'm doing currently.
Debbie Boone, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us here at WBFO.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.